You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for January 31st, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail answers them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called Art is Long, Space is Short.
I love that one so much. It's such Thank a good you. Title.
I thought that was a particularly good one. Thanks.
Clever.
The assignment was to apply the principles we talked about last week to managing your art or craft materials more effectively. As an alternate or bonus tittle, we suggested you optimize your morning routine. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook. Who took a crack at either assignment this week? Please let us know in the comments. Peggy shared this tittle report in a comment on our website. Peggy says, I have a large laundry room, which doubles as a craft room. I do mostly Dollar Tree DIYs, such as wreaths, plaques, and tiered tray items. Yesterday, I went through everything, putting all wooden things together, ribbons, invisible hanging pockets on the door, and reorganized my paints. I have a pegboard for my tools, but it was overcrowded. I took bigger, less used tools and hung them on a pegboard just outside the laundry room in the garage. They're still easy to access, but give me more room in my crafting space. So, tittle accomplished.
Peggy, I'm just clapping for you right now. Congratulations on getting the tittle done. I especially love that you relocated the lesser used tools to the off the pegboard in the laundry room and out into the garage so that your pegboard in the laundry room is more functional. And controlling the ribbons and the hanging pockets over the door is perfect. It makes them visible without them being all over the place in the laundry room, and it keeps them from coming unwound. The thing that I find with ribbons is once you start a ribbon, it's constantly trying to unwind itself. And so if you're putting those spools of ribbon into a pocket that you can see, then it's containing them and they're not unwinding, which is really great. So you did a really great job completing the tittle on this one. And I'm sure that it feels much more effective for you to be in there right now. So congratulations. Great job.
What really struck me about Peggy's response was at the heart of it was she paid attention to how she works.
And it makes things getting on and off the pegboard for the things that you use all the time, 1,000 times easier, right? Like that was the goal that she accomplished, is now all the tools that she uses all the time are hanging there on the pegboard right where she's working. And it's going to be easy to take things on and off instead of you take it off and 5 other tools come with it.
Right.
By mistake, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was picturing when she talked about the overcrowded pegboard. I thought, oh, what a nightmare.
Right.
And then, you know, and the little hooks fall
yes,
out because you're
do.
You're juggling and things are you knock one off taking something else down. Paula said, went through art supplies last month and I'm satisfied with my morning routine, so I decided to tackle all the loose change hanging around. Yesterday I got rolls from the bank and rolled up my coins last night. Now I have $50 plus to deposit in the bank.
Woohoo! And you know what? There's nothing like getting paid for doing decluttering. I'm just saying. So if you did all that work and you got $50 out of it, then you got paid and awesome. I love that. I do this to the clients a lot when I find money or checks or whatever, and people say, oh, I was looking for that, or now I don't have to buy that. And I'm like, I already paid for myself, already paid for my, you know, fee to be here because I'm finding you money. So
there you go.
If you find money to help yourself, then all the better, right?
Bridget said, I shared my 333 adventure in the Facebook group of the Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, and I became embraced with gratitude and compliments for days.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Oh, how beautiful to be in this together. My attitude is gratitude.
There you go. That's so nice. Awesome. Nice. And I'm sure, you know, you shared it with the group and it was new to some of them, and I'm sure it was super helpful. So yay. Good job, Bridget.
Okay, let's move on because we have a lot to talk about. Big changes.
We are never short of things to say.
It's no one has ever accused us of that.
No, that is a true statement.
Okay. Big changes in your life. Moving in with a new partner or spouse, a breakup or divorce, or a family member moving in with you unexpectedly, and so on, can disrupt or derail your organizing habits and routines. Today, we're going to talk about how to keep your organizing mojo and momentum, even when life changes make you feel as if the ground is moving beneath your feet. Back in early December, we talked about major life events and how they can contribute to or exacerbate the clutter in your space. That topic sparked such a lively debate that we were only able to address a fraction of the comments. So we decided to dig deeper into big life changes to examine how they affect habits and behaviors that control our environment. And since we surveyed our audience this week about the disruptors you've experienced, we thought it might also be useful to talk about the helpers in quotation marks, in your life, people, influences, or discoveries that made a positive impact on your ability to get or stay organized.
So we started last week's survey by asking what factors in your life have made it more difficult for you to declutter your home or keep it organized. And I'm going to read you a long list. Some of them were a surprise to me and some of them weren't. So here are the factors that people mentioned. Children growing up and leaving home. That's a good one. And mostly that was around because they would grow up and leave home and not take all their stuff with them.
Right.
They left behind a trail of shrapnel that did not move out when they did.
Children who grow up and leave home with all their stuff cause other problems, but not clutter problems.
Exactly. The death of a loved one, in particular, we're talking about spouses or parents, a roommate moving out, major or long-term health problems that affect you, your partner, or another close connection. And again, that's usually around parents or other, you know, generation ahead, relatives, the aunts and uncles, that kind of stuff. The holidays was one that jacked with people's ability to organize. The pandemic, of course, has messed with everybody's ability to organize. A job change is going to affect people. Adult children returning home. So those kids that left without their stuff, and then they come back and they bring more stuff when they come back. I've found like they leave things behind. They go get some stuff and then they come home and they bring stuff with them. That's always a problem. Moving to a different climate has disrupted people's lives and made it harder for them to get organized. A big obvious one, home renovation. Home renovation is so disruptive and that blows up everybody's processes. This one is a good themed one, becoming responsible for elderly parents' care and finances, bill paying, that kind of stuff. Care usually involves managing medication, managing appointments, taking them to doctors, but also doing their physical daily body habits. We have to, you know, keeping them clean and fed. And that's sometimes something that you have to take over as your parents age. And so it becomes an extra chore for you. Increased demands at work. That's always disruptive. Getting married. That's disruptive because you have to do the whole wedding planning thing, which is a whole year of, depending on how deep you go down the well, it can be a whole year of nonstop thinking about wedding. And then the other piece that most people ignore until later is taking those two households and merging them together because you've gotten married and now you're going to actually live together. And merging two households is a big deal. As we age, we have declining mobility and strength and stamina, and we have deficits in vision and hearing. And so those things start to affect our ability to get organized. Chronic pain is definitely something that impacts people's ability to do stuff. Having a baby is so disruptive. You think you're going to have time to do stuff, and then you realize, no, baby's a 24/7 thing, and it takes all your time and attention.
And speaking of babies, M just commented, my cat flipped hot oatmeal onto the carpet today. Does that count as not a help?
Yes.
We also had a report. Did we already share the report about the kitty? I can't remember if we mentioned that last week. We'll save it for later. Go ahead.
Okay. So another disruption is getting in a car accident, but the bigger issue is having an injury, tripping and falling, injury from the car accident. You know, there's a million ways that you twist your ankle, tweak your back, you know, pull a muscle, tear your shoulder.
Well,
all of those things that cause
And the loss of the car as your mode of transportation, either temporarily or permanently.
Yeah, is a mess, right? And then someone mentioned the complications of mental illness, whether it's yours or your loved one. So we will talk about that later. But the idea being that when you start having changes in mental capacity, it impacts your ability to do all kinds of stuff. Or if you're managing someone who is in that position, then it also gets in the way of organizing stuff.
Or living with someone whose mental health problems are not necessarily being managed.
Yes, that too. Yeah, absolutely. So let's look at a little bit deeper at some of the responses received in particular. Sarah cited the effects of long COVID, which we were talking about earlier. She said, I have physical limitations caused by long COVID. Very limited energy means that I need to attack projects in 5-minute intervals with 30-minute rest breaks in between. So clearly working for 5 minutes and resting for 30 minutes isn't a typical work habit. And so her illness has created a new physical limitation for her. And as Sarah has done, you might need to adjust the frequency and duration of your decluttering efforts. If you used to manage an area with 1 hour of work once a week, you might now need to spread that out to 4 15-minute sessions scattered across the day. Adjusting to short-windedness, short energy bursts, all of those are things that you don't expect to not be able to do more than 5 minutes at a time in your life. But when it comes to pass, you have to deal with that's where your limitation is. And trying to push past it doesn't get you anything except more exhausted. So this is one of those habits that it's a great time to adjust. And Sarah came up with her solution, which is she does her 5 minutes and then she rests for a little while. And then she does 5 minutes again later. Maybe you have a habit in your life, you had a habit in your life that you brought in the mail and you stand over the trash of the shredder when you sort your day's mail pile. But now that's 5 minutes that you can't spend standing. Maybe you have a broken leg and you're standing on crutches and standing there for 5 minutes doesn't work. Or maybe you have other physical impairments that have developed that make standing too difficult, bad back, heart issues, blah, blah, blah. All of those might make that 5 minute standing to do with a mail too difficult. So how you can adjust that habit is to consider a new spot to stage incoming mail so that you can deal with it sitting down. So maybe instead of standing over the trash can, you have to designate a place to sit, a part of the table, put a chair somewhere near the trash can, or put a trash can near the chair you want to sit in, and make that adjustment so that you can continue to do your daily mail processing, but you can do it in a way that works with your physical incapacity, whether that's temporary or permanent. You know, if you have a broken leg, you're not going to be on crutches forever. But if you have long-term health issues, that might be something that you're never going to be able to do again. And so adjusting for that allows you to keep processing the mail.
Let me interrupt for a comment because it fits right here. Alex said, I have finally admitted I need to use a cane and it stays in my craft area to remind me to use it. That has been a great adjustment in getting the area cleaned up because I can do more at one time.
right? Because you're allowing yourself to be supported, which is great. I mean, the whole point isn't that you should, I mean, if you think of decluttering as a chore, it's a, you know, I think it's fun, but other people don't. And if you think of it as a chore that you have to accomplish, why not use anything to your disposal that makes it easier for you? Like, why not like decluttering and make it the hardest possible way to declutter? And so good for you that you put the cane near where you need to work so that you will use it. And then you can stay at it longer and you can get more done with less pain and suffering. And that is always a good thing, right? So that was a minor habit change. And the habit was to leave a cane in the room where you needed to work. Great idea. And like you said, the result was that you could get more done. So fabulous. Okay. So another adjustment that people with illness or injury have to make is around carrying weight. It's an easy one to change and it makes a big difference in terms of allowing someone to keep their hands in a project. So where you used to stuff a large bag, lots of people were like, oh, let's get the contractor bags because we're going to have so much trash to throw away that I want to get a contractor bag. Well, you know what a contractor bag is, right? It's an extra long, extra tall, extra wide, thick, heavy trash bag. And I'm like, yeah, and who's going to drag that thing to the curb after it's full? Because it isn't going to be me. It's too much weight. So this is a perfect example of when you are injured or ill, carrying lots of weight is a problem. And let's say you had surgery on your shoulder, you tore your rotator cuff and you're getting that repaired, or you have broken your leg or twisted your ankle or whatever. All of those things require limitations on the weight that you're supposed to carry. You can't carry more than 3 pounds, blah, 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 blah. And so there's going to be times when you're hurt or ill and weight is going to be a problem. So the perfect thing to adjust for there is to make more trash bags that are small. So shift to filling up several small trash bags or plastic grocery bags, and then make a whole bunch of trips with small volume instead of one trip dragging a huge volume, so that that weight for each trip is greatly reduced. You can make the weight for the trip to be within your constraints by the doctor. And if you just change that habit of carrying small amounts more often, you can get around all kinds of limitations that are imposed by injury and illness. So you carry less, you carry it more often. The doctor will be super glad that you're moving around more because they always want you to be moving around instead of sitting still. And you're not putting undue strain on your system. You're not going to be tearing out your stitches, for instance. And I think that people are super stubborn about, we get injured and we want to get over it right away. We're super annoyed at how it limits us. And we're mad that it happened and we want it to be done with. And we're sick of rehab and we're sick of PT. And we're you get so annoyed about how it diminishes your capacity. And yet rushing back before you're ready means that you often make it worse or tear out the stitches or slow down the healing. And so it's so much better to adjust to where you are right now and try to let your body heal completely before you go back to what you were doing before. And if you just adjust your habit around carrying weight and carrying it more often, you can prevent ripping out the stitches. You can let your poor ankle recover and it will be better for you in the long run all the way around. I mean, ultimately you can think about it this way, that the highest use skill that you have in any declutter project is your ability to make decisions. If you can make the decisions, then you can get someone else to react to those decisions. So if you have any kind of support or if anybody offers to help, make use of their physical strength and let someone else carry out the donations to the car or take something off to the recycle can or to the trash can. It's easy for them and it's super useful for you. So you decide what you want to do with something and then let somebody else carry out that decision. And just making that dividing line between I'm going to make decisions, but I'm not going to do the physical work. I'm going to let somebody else help me do the physical work. That will be in service to any kind of recovery, any kind of limitation. And you're still making the decisions with what is happening right in front of you. So it's your stuff and you get to decide. And in the meantime, somebody else can be helpful by hauling out the trash. And I had a client that I was helping get out of their house and she was on oxygen tubing. And so for her, walking was a very limiting activity, and she would have to walk and then sit down after she went a certain distance. And so the idea of taking a bunch of trash bags out to the car or down the across the complex to the dumpster was completely unreasonable for where she was coming from physically. And so it was a big part of my process when I worked there that I would make all these bags of trash and donation and recycle. And I would make sure that everything that was trash while I was there went out to the dumpster so that she didn't have to carry anything. And she had other people that were coming to help her who also, they were there to do other stuff, but in payment, they would take a bunch of trash out to the dumpster. And so she managed to accommodate herself by asking the people that were coming to do stuff with her to take trash out to the dumpster. And I'm perfectly capable of doing it. And it was super easy thing that did not require a bunch of, like, I didn't have to have a bunch of brain power to get the trash out for her. But anybody that's around that wants to be useful, you can ask them to be taking stuff out so that you are conserving your strength and energy for decision-making, which means that they don't have to decide on your behalf, which is a good thing. You want to keep that as long as possible.
Before we get away from that topic, M said, when I am sick, I am totally unable to make decisions.
Mm.
So what's your advice there?
Yeah, wait.
Just wait.
Right? I mean, if you can't make decisions in that moment, then this is the perfect time to look for the, you know, things that require no decision making to happen. If you're looking at mail, for instance, you can sort the mail and you can say, yeah, that's junk and throw it out. Go look for the stack of boxes that hasn't been broken down yet and break those boxes down and take them to recycling. I mean, at the very least, you can go around the house looking for trash that you can throw out. That's, you know, it's very obvious that it's trash there. That's the wrapper you took off something. That's the, you know, the container that you opened for the food that you made today. Doing those minor things that you already know the answers to. I know that that empty can is going to go in recycling. I know that that empty, that piece of paper that is no longer in use is going to go in recycling. I know that that wadded up piece of plastic is trash. Just doing that kind of stuff, shift to the things that you focus on while you're sick and you don't have to make big decisions.
Or just rest and watch Clutter Fairy videos.
Yeah, exactly.
Collect your motivation.
You can always take a nap. I think that's the biggest thing. The idea that we have expectations that we're going to continue to do all the things that we normally do, even though we're sick. And I had this experience when I got COVID in September and my brain just stopped functioning. It was just like, I couldn't think about anything. All I could do was stare and look at the television and sleep. And that was the end. That was all I got. And it's like, you have to honor that your body's busy and it's trying to cope with and deal with the illness that is disrupting all of your internal systems. And you need to give it the space to do that. And so expecting yourself to function like normal when you're ill, it is just it's a really high ask. It's a really big request to make that you continue to function like normal when you're deathly ill. So I think you just have to let yourself be ill and come back to it when you feel better. And for me, it took 3 weeks before I felt like I was normal again and my brain was normal again. And the stuff just waited. There was a few things. It's like I could go get the mail and I could go, yeah, trash, 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 but I couldn't pay any bills. I wasn't doing anything really smart. I was just throwing out what I knew was trash. You know, you can always go scoop the litter box. You can probably get that done while you feel bad.
Ginger shared, I've participated in a January declutter challenge, getting rid of 10 items a day.
Cool.
Due to my COVID diagnosis and other issues, I've done most of the decluttering by identifying and making a list of the items. Next, I need to gather the items and take a pick, bag them and drop to trash or drive them to donation center. And she reported on, she put a very long post in the chat reporting on some specifics of what she's dealt with.
Awesome. But what a great idea to make the list of things you want to do later, right? Like you can make a list and not be trying to use up your physical energy while you recovered.
Yeah. And even if you're, you know, even with impaired decision-making capacity, you can make your list and treat it as raw material. It's your first draft with the expectation that when your head is clear, when you're feeling better, when your head is clearer, you'll sit down and you've got the list to start from, and you can start crossing off the things that were ridiculous or, you know, adding more things that you didn't think of while you were feeling bad.
Right. And modify and because really you're just trying to capture thoughts that you're having in the moment. And if you can sit and look at a room and say, that's a problem over there, that's a problem over there, even if you're just making a list of areas to address, you can make that list while you're sick and come back to it when you're well. But ultimately, you just want to give your body the resources to recover from something. And so change your expectations. Don't have such high expectations of all the things you're still going to be able to do while you're sick, because it's just not reasonable. We just would rather not be sick. That's the truth.
Darn right. I better let you get to the next survey response.
Okay. So for the same question, Marie answered, I had a minor surgical procedure that's kept me from doing much for the last 2 weeks. And I'm also getting married in the fall. So wedding planning takes over all of my time. So your issue is short term. You had a minor procedure and you're recovering. And once you recover, then you can make accommodations that are temporary. So don't rush everything. We've talked about that. Do everything that you can to support your recovery. Get the rest the doctor suggests, and don't try to overdo, as that just is going to slow your healing down. You definitely want to heal completely before you dive back into projects. And so allow that time and let the organizing wait. And based on the constraints that the doctor suggests, when you get back to it, build up your activity level slowly. So just like any exercise program where somebody starts from, I haven't been exercising to now I'm going to, you don't dive in at full speed and full weight and full activity level. You slowly build up your activity over time to get your body conditioned slowly. And so the same thing when you're coming back to organizing, you don't need to dive back in full speed. You can do a little bit and, you know, do a half an hour or do an hour of something and then stop for the day and see how you feel the next day. Like, let yourself experience a little bit and see how the recovery is the next day. What you don't want to do is dive in, work way past, think, oh, I'm fine, and do a whole bunch of work. And then you wake up the next day and you're recovering for 4 days because you overdid it. So you want to step back into any kind of a project after any kind of physical impairment, illness, or injury. You want to come back at it slowly. And so do little bits, do less weight, do less repetition, and stop and rest and see how you feel. Because while you're in the middle of it, you don't really realize that you're sort of overdoing or you're taking more energy than you think you are. So it's important to do half, do a quarter, do a little bit, and then stop and register how it's impacting you and how you feel the next day before you come back to it and do some more. I think that buildup is the most important thing that you do slowly. An anonymous audience member mentioned that her husband's mental health issues complicate her approach to clutter. She says, when certain things are going on, it's all hands on deck, and I don't have a clear head to either declutter or participate in rejuvenating activities. Clearly, handling your husband's needs come first when he's in crisis or trouble, partially because if you don't deal with it, it's going to impact everything else on a much bigger scale. And there are suggestions for accommodating that unpredictable environment that results when a loved one has mental health challenges. So one thing, this is going to be an ongoing challenge. Mental health issues related to age, like dementia or Alzheimer's, don't usually vastly improve as one ages. It's usually sort of a slow decline over time. So this type of issue, if you're dealing with that in your household, it requires permanent changes to habits around how one deals with clutter. Accepting your companion's limitations and deriving new habits, giving this info is important. I was with a client this weekend who's struggling because her husband's mental capacity has changed after they discovered a brain tumor, which they removed. And then he started having cancer treatment. And so treatments for cancer are designed to make brain fog. Like everybody has struggles with the chemo treatments that come with cancer and how that impacts your executive functioning, how it impacts your ability to think. And so it really does give people brain fog. So A, he had a tumor that a major surgery and had it removed, and B, he's having cancer treatments and they're messing around with his brain way too much right now. So he's not the same. He likely will never be the same in terms of mental capacity. And her struggle this weekend is around accepting this new reality about him after relying on him for so long. And I think that in itself, not accepting that this is the new reality and it can't be changed or fixed, is really important. And I had a client who collected and bought a lot, and she relied on her husband to be the strong and steady one. And then he started having dementia issues. And so he was not able to manage their finances anymore. He was not able to support her in keeping the house organized. Where he had been accepting of the chaos before, it really started to agitate and distress him to be in that level of density, that much stuff in the house and that many blocks to pathways and things. It really started to be a problem for him mentally to live in that environment. And so she was very upset that he was not in the same place, expecting someone with mental illness to be who they were before the mental illness became part of your lives is a recipe for disappointment for everyone. And I know that it's a struggle to accept that, but being very clear about what the person can and cannot do will only make your job of living with them and managing around them easier. And so trying to get clear with the doctor about dementia, Alzheimer's affects memory, it affects executive functioning, it affects the ability to sequence tasks, it affects the ability to make decisions, and all of those things, and the brain fog that comes from chemo treatment, that chemotherapy impairs your ability to make decisions because you have brain fog. And those of you that have had COVID totally understand what it's like when your brain is going to sleep because it can't deal. And so accepting that partner, your housemate, your spouse, just doesn't have the capacity anymore. While it's a loss and it makes it difficult for you to do things you used to do, it also gives you the starting point around which to develop another operation, and recognizing he can't manage the mail anymore. He's managed the mail for 50 years, but now he can't. He's paid the bills for 50 years, but now he can't. And so recognizing where those deficits are going to be and where they're going to be permanently, and developing new habits around dealing with them can only make your life easier. And the faster that you recognize the limitations and figure out new ways to deal with them, figure out new habits, inserting new people. I mean, this is the point where kids usually get assigned to take over finances and things, because if you're the caregiver, then all of your energy is going to, like she was saying earlier, she has to deal with her mental health, the husband's mental health. And I read into her what she's saying, his mental health episodes. And so there's a whole lot of focus that's required for that. And that means that some of the things you've been doing need to be assigned out to someone else. It's time to let someone else take on the things that can be managed without your help, so that you can do what you need to do to deal with your spouse. And I think that that's important. One of the ways that caregivers end up being sick themselves is that they try to keep doing everything that they were used to be doing and take on this whole full-time caregiving thing of somebody in their house. And so this is a recipe for disaster. This is not, you know, it's not that your spouse got the flu. Your spouse got a major adjustment to their capacities, whether that's physical or mental. And rewriting the way that your family functions and the habits that you use to get things accomplished is super important to keep the caregiver from being burnt out, and that the person that needs the care continues to get the care that they need, so that everybody's energy is going towards that and all that other stuff gets handled some other way. I see somebody with their hands up. Oh, Sandra. Hi, Sandra.
All right. Yeah, I'd just like to, I mean, it must be hard for people who've got family members going through that. I'd just like to put in from the point of view of somebody whose cognitive facilities is declining,
right?
Has been declining for a number of years, and I live alone, so I have care staff. And I'd just like to reiterate that not one person can do it. Due to COVID in 2020, one of my care staff had to shield what in the UK the government said people who were so ill, who were at high risk, had to not come to work anymore. So yeah. I was down to one care staff, and she got totally burnt out. My sister had to come up from down south and stay with me for a week while my member of care staff took annual leave for a week, but she spent that all in bed recovering from being burnt out. So I learned from that, you know, I couldn't just have two staff. I have to have three staff, so that, you know, if one's on annual leave and one goes sick, I've got, you know, staff aren't going to get burnt out, because as my cognitive issues get worse, more and more stuff that when it was just my physical disabilities and my brain worked fine, I could do all the stuff on the computer and stuff and do ordering and stuff that I needed to do, and I just needed help with the physical stuff. But in the last few years, my cognitive issues
have made that harder.
Worse, and I can't learn new stuff. I get struggle with certain IT if it's too complex, and I can't always deal with people on the phone, and I can't sequence time, and I have brain fog, and, you know, and so many things that just make it so difficult to do what other people would class as, oh, that's a really easy thing, that's a really simple thing. But when your brain doesn't work the way it ought to anymore, you realize how difficult some tasks actually are that we take for granted.
Well, and how sophisticated our brain is.
We can do those things. Our brains are miraculously complex, wonderful things. But when we're adults and we've learned stuff, we forget that as kids, it's difficult for kids to learn this stuff.
Mm.
But once we're an adult, we just take it for granted because we make these decisions in split microseconds. But when you can't do those, what you thought were simple tasks before, you realize actually they're not easy brain tasks. They're quite hard. So I'd just like to encourage those out there who've put on this thing that they're struggling with, their partners, their family members, their parents, their mental health issues, you know, get help, get more help than you think you need, because
You don't want to burn somebody out.
No, you don't want to burn. You don't want to burn out. And when your brain starts going wrong, mine started going wrong in 2016. And it's just as I age, it's getting worse. There's more stuff going. And I haven't got dementia or Alzheimer's. I've just got some of it's part of my disability, but some of it's cognitive issues that they don't quite know what's going on in there, despite neuropsychiatrists doing tests on me and stuff. But it's difficult. Yeah. And also it's really difficult to come to terms with yourself. You know, I used to pride myself on my memory and my brain and my ability to multitask when I used to be at work and stuff. And now I can no longer work and I can't multitask. And, you know, my brain and my body don't connect. And there's so much that I can't do and I have to give over to staff. And, you know, I have 30 odd hours a week of care. And it's only going to keep getting increasing as I get older, you know, and I'm only in
what you're describing is a perfect example of what I'm saying, that it's, you really have to adjust to where you're standing and for your own quality of life. And so thank you. I appreciate you sharing. Thank you so much for talking about that.
No problem.
It's a perfect example. Thank you. I just
hope it helps people and encourages people to get help.
Yeah. Cause it really is. For you to have a better quality of life, you need support around those things. And so this is exactly what I'm talking about. And my client this weekend, you know, her big, strong husband, who's been in charge of managing things for so long, is now not able to do any of those things. And we were just trying to sell their house and move out, which is why I was there. And we've got to go through all the things. And so he has a collection and I was trying to get him to look at the collection of U of H Cougar paraphernalia and have him pick it, cause he has hundreds of things, and have him pick his favorites. And just having that conversation with him about what his favorites were made him so stressed out And he kept asking me, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? And then his, and then they, somebody's app said that his blood pressure had spiked. I mean, his blood sugar had spiked. And so that stress messed with his blood sugar. So it was clear to me then, okay, he wants to participate in making the decisions, but he does not have the capacity right now. And so for me, that adjusts how I address this move, because the move isn't going to wait until he's better to make the decision. So we're going to have to go around his decision-making and make those decisions on his behalf. And allowing her to adjust to that was an important expectation change for her. Like she's like, well, I've been trying to get him to get in there and organize his desk. And I'm like, yeah, he can't do that. Like he can't do that. And he won't be able to do that between now and when you guys move. Like that isn't going to happen. So we got to let somebody else go in there and organize his desk for him, because it's not going to work to keep yelling at him to go in there and organize something that he really doesn't have the capacity to do. And so changing that expectation for her was important for us moving our project forward, and tied in exactly to what we're talking about today. There may be a time when the chemo is over and he's recovered from the surgery in his brain. And, you know, we're 2 years from now, he may be physically and mentally in a better place where he can sequence tasks and his executive functioning has improved some, but we can't get to that result between now and when they move next month. And so we have to adapt for what's going on right now. And so do you when you're in that place. Okay, so here is another survey question. What factors in your life have helped you maintain or improve your efforts to declutter your home or keep it organized? And Anne replied that her husband was one such factor. She shared, he is much neater than me and leads by example. And I say, hooray for Anne for finding a husband who's a good influence. Look for people who support the good habits that you want to cultivate and practice. And be the good habits that you want to see from others. Sometimes I get asked questions like, how do I get my husband on board? Like, well, you can't make them do something they don't want to do, but you can go about managing your own things and have good results that you can physically see in the environment. And sometimes people are inspired to make shifts when they see the example of, you cleaned out your part of the closet and now it looks better. Or you did your part of the kitchen process, or you cleared out the area where you sit, or you went into the room that is yours or your office and you made a big adjustment in there and took out a bunch of trash and pulled out a bunch of shredding and pulled out a bunch of recycling and everything looks better. And sometimes you can be the example of what it could be and remind someone, this is what it's like. And so that might help you maintain your efforts if it helps get somebody else on board as well. Sandra had this to say, I've always made my bed in the morning, and I think that gives me a good start to whatever the day brings. If I don't get anything else done, I can still say I did that one thing. It's also very nice to get ready for bed in a tidy environment. It sets you up for good rest. And Sandra is so right. A beautiful, visually calm room can prime you for good night's sleep. But what Sandra's experience also highlights is a concept we've talked about before, which is keystone habits. These are powerful and sometimes very small behaviors that you do without any need for exerting willpower or persuasion that produce a ripple effect across everything else you do throughout your day. Behavioral psychologists identify both useful and unproductive keystone habits, but the Clutter Fairy, we like to focus on positive habits you can cultivate and set you up for success in everything that follows. So making the bed is a great example of a keystone habit that sets you up for success. And we've talked about others like managing the dishes after every meal, resetting your desk at the end of the workday, taking care of staging things that need to leave the house with you in the morning, like always putting your keys in the same parking space so that it's easy to leave the house without stress every day. Those kinds of keystone habits we're talking about can just be the smallest thing, like putting the keys on the hook by the door. But that one thing can totally stress you out the next day or not, depending on how you feel. And so how quickly you find the keys, it affects how you feel. And so thinking through those little repetitive things that you can do that will support you in functioning and being and moving forward, super important.
Read one more answer and then we'll move on to announcements and such.
So one other answer came from Susan, who mentioned having a clear table to use as a workspace. And we often talk about the seductive power of the horizontal surface that collects all kinds of cast off debris of your life and turns it into clutter. But let's talk for a moment about what you could do with a horizontal surface that's always just waiting for you to put it to work on an organizing project instead. How might your experience of decluttering change if you didn't have to start every effort by carving out a space to work in? So if you have a work table that you keep clear, then you can always start a project because you have a workspace to work on that's always readily available. A life coach friend of ours would describe keeping the table clear for your use at any moment as a creating a supportive environment. So having that table be clear is creating a supportive environment. Another simple example is keeping a trash can next to the spot where you sit to purge the coupons or the recipe collections or the mail. I was in somebody's house recently and they kept getting up and walking over to a trash can and then coming back and sitting down. I was like, you know, we can put a trash can right there. So you can just be throwing trash in right where you are. And I think that they had never thought about it. They hadn't thought about it for a minute. And so I grabbed a trash can, put it over there, and suddenly the process got much faster. Keeping supplies that you need near you, near where you're going to use them, is super important. If you sit in the same place every day to open mail, to read email on the computer, then you probably need a letter opener to open the mail. And then you need to be able to throw the trash out right there while you're working on it. Maybe if you're going to be looking at the email and you need to be able to take notes, so you need a little notepad there with a pen. Anything that you can do to facilitate the stuff that you do all the time every day makes it be easier and faster. And so looking through the repetitive tasks that you do and figuring out how you can be more supportive of those tasks and how you can supply yourself better. Now, don't use this as an excuse to jam up a space. That's not what I'm trying to tell you. But you can say, I'm going to do the mail here every day. And the most important thing is, can I throw stuff away? And can I quickly open the letter? And so having one letter opener there and one pen and a pad to take notes is probably enough supplies to support you in your process. So Kathy shared a change of habits that helped her efforts. And she said, I quit buying anything ahead, including groceries on sale. So we all have different levels of comfort about how much inventory we need to keep on hand for the things that we consume or that we use all the time. But it's important to find a balance between the stuff that you need that you have around you to feel secure and the space you have available to keep it. So for Kathy, that means trusting that most of what she'll need will be available when she goes looking for it. So she's adjusted to keep a low inventory of what is in groceries in particular, what's she's keeping in reserve. So she's keeping low inventory. But even if your threshold for those reserves is higher, so you feel like you need a bigger volume, you can examine those buying patterns and behaviors to make sure they're a good fit for your space. It may be that whatever volume you are trying to keep is too big for the house that you have or too big for the storage you have. And this always makes me think of Costco buying. We all love the concept of the cool large size packages, the big volumes, and the discount that comes with the big volumes from Costco. But it's a model that's designed to make us overbuy. So if you can't use that volume because of space constraints, or you can't consume that volume fast enough to prevent a bunch of waste, then Costco buying, taking advantage of Costco's discounts, is really creating problems instead of solving them. So for some of us, warehouse store buying is really a negative habit that impacts our life instead of a positive one. You know, if you're at home with a family of five or six, and you're buying a larger volume food at a discounted price, and it all gets eaten because you got six adults in the house trying to eat it all, then that's one thing. But for me to go to Costco Yeah, me and the cats can't eat that much that fast. So, you know, that pack, I get sick of the food way before I run out of it. And then I end up throwing it away, or I can't, you know, you can, sure, you can buy a package of lettuce that's monstrous, but then I can't eat it fast enough unless I just sit there and eat lettuce nonstop all every day. And so adjusting your buying habits to what you have the capacity to store and your consumption pattern is a way to adjust your shopping habit so that it impacts your space positively instead of negatively. And that's a habit change that I think everybody can do, regardless of the space they have and regardless of the capacities they have, changing how and when and how much you buy and store is always a good habit to look at and modify for your situation.
To right size it to.
Yes, space, yes, exactly. Available. Perfect. Yeah. Right, okay. Sizing is perfect name.
We will be back next week, Tuesday, February 7th at noon U.S. Central Time. We're going to make a trip back into the kitchen. In our recent survey about the rooms that caused the most trouble, the kitchen was very close. I think the kitchen was second only to the garage/basement
right
answer. So we're going to go back into the kitchen and offer some practical tips for thinning out your stock of supplies and tools and equipment. And I don't have a snappy title for it yet, but watch your email because you'll see the snappy title as soon as I come up with it.
It'll come up. It'll be in your email soon.
That's right. Probably, tomorrow. You'll see it tomorrow.
Right.
Will you please give us a tittle?
Yes. Okay. So the tittle is shift a habit to rise to your new challenge. So this week's assignment is to examine elements of your routine that have been derailed by recent changes in your life. Thinking about your decluttering or organizing process, are there habits that used to work before a major event or a change in circumstances, but that aren't getting the same results as before? And for one of those disruptive habits that you've identified, think about what events or factors have adversely affected the habit, what changed, and how did it break your system? And then now reflect on what adjustments you might make to the habit to get it back on track. Would a change of duration help? What about a change of frequency? Would shifting this habit to a different time of the day or week make a difference? Is there anyone that you could ask for help with this habit or routine? And do you need to look for outside resources? So we're just trying to get you to look at, you've had a habit, you've done it for a long time, and now that habit isn't working. So let's find out what's disrupted it, what's affecting it, and how can you change it in order to rewrite it, to make it a new habit that will actually work for you in wherever you are right now. And come back and tell us about it next week.
Wonderful. I have one more question I want to share and get your response to. Sorry, this one's gonna call for your best improv answer.
Okay. But
this was asked privately, so I can't identify who said it. What advice would you give to a client who is dealing with a partner or spouse who has mental illness issues like depression or anxiety, mood disorder? What advice would you give to the client for trying to keep their organizing process going?
So depression, anxiety, bipolar, all of those things impact mental capacity in ways that we don't completely understand these days, but it does cause changes. No one that is dealing with depression or dealing with anxiety is at their possible best. And so recognizing that those things impair executive function, they make decision-making harder, they make sequencing tasks harder, and all of those things that we just sort of do when we're feeling well and happy, that we sort of do without thinking, become difficult chores. So I think the first thing to do as the person that is dealing with the, if you're dealing with someone that's got that issue, those issues, then changing your expectations for them is really important. It isn't a matter of yelling at them or cajoling them into doing something. It's recognizing that those mental illnesses impact your ability to function and make decisions and do routine things. And so change your expectations about what they can do. Support them in any way that you can. I would go at them with much smaller tasks, much smaller decision-making, and much smaller projects. So telling somebody, go organize your office, like my client this weekend, I need him to organize his office. Yeah, but he can't. So maybe you go in there and do some preliminary organizing work and then ask them about one small pile today and one small pile tomorrow and try to get feedback and decision-making. And clearly there's good days and bad days of that. And there may be huge impairments or only minor impairments. So the results that you'll get will depend on where they are along the spectrum and whether they're going to have any kind of recovery or support from medication, that kind of stuff. So it's a moving target, obviously. People with those kind of illnesses usually are trying to get treatment. They're trying to take medications. Some medications work better than others, blah, blah, blah. And you have to experiment until you get the right cocktail that works for you to support your executive functioning. But any point in time, you can do some certain amount of work and then ask for their input in little small bites. I think it's very easy for somebody with a mental illness to be overwhelmed, particularly with decision-making. And so instead of saying, what of these papers am I going to keep? You can say, I think we need to throw away these pieces of paper. Do you agree? And let them flip through the stack and say if they agree or not. I think we are, I think I need to file these pieces of paper away. Do you agree? Let them look through it and see. I think these shirts don't fit you and it'd be okay to donate them. Do you agree? And let them look through and see. And so chopping down their decision-making to the, think of it as like, you know, you can't get a toddler. You can't say to a toddler, what do you want for dinner? You have to say to a toddler, do you want hamburgers or chicken? And right. And they can pick A or B, right? And so if you think of the decision-making tree the same for someone who has a mental illness as how you would talk to a little kid who has diminished capacity, right? They are easily overwhelmed. They haven't developed all their executive functioning skills yet. And so if you think of somebody with that mental incapacity as being a child, not that they're actually a child, but that they have that level of functioning, and just adjust their decision-making like you would for a little kid. Do you want A or B instead of go solve that problem in the office? You can say, do you want to do A or B here? And let them, you know, see how far they can go. And then recognizing when whatever accommodations you can make are still insufficient, then you just have to acknowledge that this person cannot participate in this process and you're going to have to get around the project some other way. You're going to have to do it yourself. You're going to have to ask for other support to come in and do it. But expecting someone who can't process to process is a recipe for your frustration and failure. So you want to get a feel for how much they can do and try to see where they can participate. And then if you evaluate at some point that they really can't participate, then move on and, you know, make a new plan. It's time to bring in the cavalry and get an organizer support, get a caregiver support, get some other support to help you do a project that person normally would be doing.
Thank you.
Is that enough ad-libbing?
I think that's great.
Okay.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we'd love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere else that you've found us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I know this was an esoteric and weird conversation, but we did want to address that sometimes your life and your physical capacity and your mental capacity gets in the way. So let's see if we can adjust some habits to make it work better for you. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.